This is the case of Douglas County School District Number 10 versus Tribido. Good morning to everybody. Grab a seat for the moment. Thank you for wearing masks. Please keep your masks on. If you are not, presenting, if you are presenting, please take your mask off so that we can hear and understand what you have to say. Justice Papik is recused from this matter, so we have five members of the court here in person. Justice Miller Lerman is participating by WebEx.
Good morning. I'm here by WebEx. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Does anybody have any questions before we begin? No questions. Mr. Miller, then, good morning to you. You may approach and you may proceed.
May it please the court, counsel. I'm Jeff Miller with Young & White Law Offices of Omaha. We're attorneys for the Elkhorn School District. First, I want to thank the court for its efforts to keep the court systems open during this pandemic so that the public's interest can be served. In a condemnation action like this, the fair market value is the hallmark for both the owner and for the governmental entity. The government pays and the owner receives fair market value for the land that's actually acquired. The government pays and the owner receives the decrease in the fair market value of any remainder property not taken. That's called, referred to as severance damage and remainder damage. And it's allowed as under the state constitution's or damage clause. But severance damage is still based on fair market value and the decrease in the fair market value caused by the severance, if any. When evaluating if there's any decrease in the remainder property, all the non-speculative burdens and inconveniences that affect the remainder land can be considered if they would affect a prospective purchaser or buyer in evaluating the value of the land. But those are only considered as they affect the fair market value of the remainder. They are not to be separately itemized and lined up, and then the total is considered the severance damages.
Would it be proper for a witness testifying about fair market value of the remainder to proceed inductively and say, here's a problem we now have on the remainder, here's another problem we have on the remainder, and kind of go through those elements and then ultimately get to what you suggest would be the proper statement or opinion? Now here's the total. So is it proper to do the math and testify as to the pieces and parts that went into the total that actually would represent that witness's suggestion or opinion? Thank you.
No, I don't think so, Your Honor. I think that's what's called a summation approach, where you itemize or put a value on each and then you just add up the total. And the case law has rejected that. You are to consider those inconveniences and burdens that are placed on that remainder as a whole, is what the case law says. They are not to be separately allowed as separate elements. They are not to be separately awarded in addition to or on top of the decrease in the fair market value of the remainder.
So what the challenge would be for an expert like that, what would be the proper testimony? Not necessarily, as you say, summation, like here's X plus Y plus Z, but rather to say, here's the issues we will encounter that are now attributable to the remainder. If it was a narrative with no numbers, would that be okay?
If it was a narrative which discussed the burdens and the inconveniences and then came up with a whole effect on the remainder and a decrease, that would be proper testimony. But that's not what happened here. What happened here is Kroger, one of the appraisers for the owner, testified to a decrease in the remainder of the land at 55 cents for a total 55 cents per square foot, for a total decrease in the fair market value of the remainder of $733,000. DeZono, the other appraiser, testified to a decrease of 50 cents per square foot, which is a total diminished value of the remainder of $752,000. But then both of them added on to that diminished value some $900,000 for grading and dirt field costs. And I think it's important that you understand that testimony. So I'd like to read into the record, read for you DeZono's testimony on this, which is on page 324 on a cross-examination. And I'll leave out the question and answers. Now, and this is by Duncan Young. Now, as I recall your testimony from yesterday, with respect to the damages, the remainder, you had an item in your report that says, quote, damages to the remainder, correct? Yes. And that's based on 50 cents per square foot. Correct. Yes. In addition to that, you have an entry called, quote, site work. You recall that? Yes. And that's the grading issue. Correct? Correct. So you added that in along with the diminished value of 50 cents a square foot. Correct? Yes. And that comes out to your 1.6 million. Yes. And that's how you come up with your 1.6 million for the damages for the remainder. Answer, yes. So site work was a separate item. Correct. Correct. Answer, site work is a separate item. Kroger testified similarly. This is on page 225 on cross-examination by Duncan Young. Now, your testimony earlier with respect to the damages to the remainder, do you recall that? I do. A portion of that, you were talking about grading costs. Yes. And then you were asked for your total amount of compensation was for the taking. Yes. And that figure was $5,890,000. Yes. And in that, you included cost to cure damages. Did you not? I included damages for grading. Right, cost to cure, what it would cost you to grade the property. I identified them as damages. So you had a severance damage of $690,000. Yes, I believe that is correct. And both of those figures, or both of those, were included in the $5,890,000 figure. Yes.
Let me get Zoom back here and ask, or WebEx back here, as it were. What did the jury come back with as a total?
On the severance?
No, the total damages.
The total damages was $4.6 million.
Okay. And what did DeZono say total damages taken and severance?
He said $7 million.
So his total exceeds the jury verdict. Is that fair to say?
That's fair to say.
Thank you.
In various cases, Walking Horse, Dillon, Armbruster, Landsman, we're citing in our brief, Hay Farms, you've repeatedly held that the proper measure of damages for the remainder, if there is any, is the diminished value in fair market value of the remainder. As
let me see if I understand your argument. The expert had taken the grading cost from Redera and adding it on to an amount per square, is it square foot?
Yes, sir.
If they had just taken that amount and increased the square footage by the amount of the grading, would that have been a proper estimation?
I think that would be a proper estimation because they're evaluating the effect of that burden on the diminished value. But here they separately itemized it out. They valued the diminished value of the remainder, and then they added on $860,000, $900,000.
So you think they did it twice?
It's a plus.
Wasn't the jury instructed in this case that fair market value was the touchstone in instructions 4 and 5? You're not claiming that those instructions were incomplete or inaccurate in any respect.
No, those were your standard jury instructions, but we also offered an instruction because this evidence came in on this separate item that they weren't supposed to consider cost secure or these separate items.
But those instructions tell them just to consider fair market value and explain what fair market value is. Isn't that right?
The general instructions did. But now we got evidence in the record of the separate itemized element of damages that they weren't instructed on.
But they weren't instructed to consider anything other than fair market value.
They were instructed to consider fair market value. But they weren't instructed to disregard cost to cure or separate itemized damages in a dish that are above and beyond the fair market value.
How was the evidence argued on summation by the parties?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
How was that evidence argued by the appellees during summation?
I'm not sure, Your Honor, but I'm sure we argued based on straight on the jury instructions because we didn't have anything else to argue on.
No, the appellees.
Oh, the appellees? Well, they were arguing off the total amount. The one was $5.8 million and the other was $7.8 million. So,
did they argue that that number should be added in to represent the fair market value?
They considered it already in the bundle. It's already in the bundle of $7 million or in the bundle of $5.8 million for their two appraiser values. My time is up, but in all these cases that I cited to you, in your opinions, you take great effort and spend pages to detail the witnesses and what they testified to as to value and numbers and stuff. And if you do that here, I'm sure that you'll come up with a decision that there was two elements by the landowner on diminished value for the remainder. There was an actual diminished fair market value. And then there was a second independent itemized element of damages of some $900,000, and that's not the proper measure. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
This is Mr. Barney.
Yes, Your Honor.
Good morning to you.
Good morning.
You may proceed.
Thank you. Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. Thank you for having us here today in person for these arguments. My name is Adam Barney. I'm attorney for the appellee in this case, Tribito LLC. I present to the court, this case is not really about the admissibility of evidence. The issues that are outlined in the brief are challenges that the appellant has to the credibility of the testimony of these two expert witnesses. This is an issue that the district court was well attuned to. There's a matter that was had a motions in limine filed months prior to the trial. There is a hearing that was well briefed, extensive briefing on it. There's pretrial conferences, there were sidebar discussions. There was discussions during the jury instructions. There was a post-trial order all on this issue, and the judge was well attuned to what was going on. And he listened very closely to the testimony from these expert appraisers as they came in. And what these appraisers testified to and what the district court heard in ruling on the admissibility was both appraisers testified that the damages to the remainder related to the reduction in the fair market value. That explicitly. What the appellant asks you to do is ignore that testimony, to dig deeper. And I think what's maybe most telling of the district court's mindset as he was evaluating this issue probably comes from his statement during the jury instruction conference. And during that conference, he recognized and stated, as I hear the testimony of these appraisers, they're not asking the school district to pay for the dirt. And that's on page 646 of the Bill of Exceptions. He said, what they're asking is that this dirt, because it needs to be fixed, causes a reduction in the fair market value of the property. And that's exactly how the evidence came in. And it makes sense intuitively. If it costs more money to develop property after a taking than it did before the taking, increased costs means a willing buyer and the fair market value is going to go down. And that's the testimony that came in. The discussion that was had just briefly here with Ms. Justice Miller-Lerman about the itemization and are appraisers restricted in condemnation actions from walking through and saying, here's issues A through Z. There may be that many issues with the property. And I think that A causes this amount of damage, those sorts of things. The condemnee has a right to explain how it gets these damages. They don't have to come and say there's 20, 50, 100 issues with the property as a result of the taking and give one lump sum number. They can talk about it. They can explain it to the jury. That's their right. These statutes are intended to get just compensation for the condemnee in the action. And they have a right to do that. And once you get past that issue, once you look to determine, yes, they testified about fair market value, that testimony was admissible. They are able to challenge the credibility on cross-examination by calling their other experts. That takes care of assignment of error number one. And when assignment of error number one falls, so too does assignments number 2, 3, and 4.
May I ask you a question similar to opposing counsel? Is this correct that with respect to the verdict that the jury returned, the total was $4.6 million roughly? Is that right?
Approximately, that's correct.
Okay. And if this court were to find that the pieces and parts with respect to the diminished value or the diminished value of fair market value on the remainder was erroneous, could the court nevertheless look to see what the total that the jury did is supported by someone's testimony? In other words, is there a witness who has testified to a greater total than 4.6? And we visited with opposing counsel, I believe, on Mr. Dazone and Mr. Kruger, and they came in at 5.8 and 7.27 or something like that.
Sure. So I do think you can look in to see whether there's other evidence that would support the jury verdict. And assuming that the evidence from Mr. DeZona and Mr. Kroger came in improperly, which we're obviously not conceding, but assuming that it was improper, there is other grounds to affirm here. And one of the ways you can look at this, if you dig into the evidence, and we didn't address this in our brief, so I'll try to explain math at the council table as well as I can here. But one way that the jury could have got to this number outside of Mr. Kroger and Mr. DeZona's numbers is that the jury may have determined that the remainder, the highest and best use, was no longer going to be mixed-use zoning and mixed-use development. They may have determined that the highest and best use was a residential development. And that testimony, if that finding, that may have been the finding based upon the testimony of Elkhorn's appraiser, who testified that he did not believe that the persons involved in rezoning would allow mixed-use zoning next to a school. That's a Bill of Exceptions 592 through 593. And if they found that if they followed Mr. Giff's, Marty Giff's testimony there, there was evidence in the record that was entered over our objection of property values of residential properties and residential sales. You can find those at page 517 through 518 of the Bill of Exceptions, 544. And the sales there range from 28,000 to 52,000 per acre. And if you take the math that's in the appellant's brief, the range they say and they assume that the jury came to, it fits within that range. Or the jury may have determined that the remainder had a higher property value prior to the taking than the north part, right? So what, again, over objection, Marty Giff, the appellant's appraiser, testified that he believed the highest and best use between the north part and the south part was different, and that the south, the north part's highest and best use was a residential development, and the south part's highest and best use was commercial development. He also testified that he believes that a commercial development is valued in excess of 25 to 40% more than a residential subdivision. And if you walk through the math there, you can see they may have valued the north part as a residential subdivision, and they may have, prior to the taking, determined that the south portion was worth 40% more than that. And the math works out, and you get to a number that sits outside of Mr. DeZona and Mr. Kroger's testimony. But I don't think you have to get there. I really don't. I think that what the district court did was he looked very closely at what these appraisers testified to, determined that they looked the market value, and this impacted the market value. Any other questions on assignments of error numbers 1 through 4? Otherwise, I'll move on to number 5.
Would you describe this as the verdict form in this case as a general verdict form?
General, yes.
And how do our rules with respect to general verdict forms inform the discussion about it? It's sort of natural to want to figure out what the jury was thinking, but what do our propositions of law tell us about general verdict
forms? Yeah, it's natural to try to figure it out, but we can't, right? We don't know what happened in that.
Can we reverse engineer this verdict?
Yeah, you can't, but I think it's supported by evidence, and that's what we're looking for is can this verdict be supported by the evidence? And absolutely it can. But we're not here to guess and try to figure out how they got there. As to assignment of error number 5, the challenge to the award of attorney's fees, we briefed this issue, and I don't intend to repeat that briefing. What I would like to do is, after briefing was completed, this court issued a decision in Sellers versus Reefer Systems. And if the issue of attorney's fees wasn't crystal clear from the case law outlined in our brief, it's cemented based upon Sellers versus Reefer Systems. In that case, the court was looking to how do you approach a reasonable attorney's fees? In that case, it was for appellate fees. The decision, in that decision, the court said, we have never held that in order to recover statutory reasonable attorney's fees, the attorney must submit the details of the attorney-client agreement. The court goes through and talks about cases that address reasonable attorney's fees. And ultimately, what the court concluded and held was that the movement's affidavit did not need to set forth a detailed log of all tasks and the amount of time spent on each task in order to be considered in determining reasonable attorney's fees. That's precisely their assignment of error in this case.
That doesn't mean you can't do it, and it may make it more persuasive to a trial judge who's setting your fee if you itemize the fees. You're not saying that our Sellers opinion blessed the idea that you never need to itemize what you did.
No, that's precisely correct, Your Honor. It may be more persuasive if you hand a detailed log to the judge, here's what we've done, but you don't have to do it. And there's no burden. What the judge is doing is he's looking at reasonable fees. And the district court in this action had affidavits from 3 well-respected members of the bar opining as to the reasonableness of the fees. He presided over this case for 2.5 years, rather contentious litigation. And he determined not only were these reasonable fees, they were extremely reasonable. And we don't believe the district court abused its discretion in any way. Unless there's any further questions from anyone on the court, we would ask the jury's verdict and the judgment be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal?
Oh, yeah.
There is no time for rebuttal. That concludes arguments for this case for today. So thank you very much. Please leave by the side door. And thank you again for abiding by our coronavirus regulations. Appreciate it very much. Thank you.